Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Scary Stories for the Soul. The nature of a lighthouse is to bring people to safety. Its very purpose is to break the never-ending darkness of the sea and cast light into shadows. Taking that into consideration, it's no wonder being a lighthouse for someone has become such a romantic turn of phrase. But there is a dark side to these monoliths. Not all lighthouses exude warmth and safety. Some serve as capsules for tragedies past, deaths gone unremembered, and spirits left to roam the spiraling stairs of a forgotten relic, alone and confused. Some lighthouses don't just warn us of danger, they are danger. The United States boasts an abnormal amount of haunted lighthouses, none of which hold a candle to Cape Romaine Lighthouse on Lighthouse Island in McLellanville, South Carolina. Its haunting originates from the 19th century murder of a lighthouse keeper's wife, who has unfortunately remained unnamed in all public records. Sometime during the late 19th century, Cape Romaine Lighthouse was entrusted into the care of a man named Fisher, a Norwegian sailor who went to tend to the station with his wife. Living on the island was ideal at first. The sea was calming, although the days were long. But unfortunately, not much time passed before the woman, who had never been away from her family for so long, began to feel the walls closing in on her. Isolation. Total darkness in the night, and fear that a ship would run aground at her doorstep, all haunted her nerves. Eventually, Fisher's wife began insisting that they leave the island and go home to Norway. But Fisher refused. Was it the necessity of the job that kept him there? Or had the same isolation and darkness and fear that had whispered into his wife's ears planted roots into his own brain? Had whatever wickedness she felt sunk its claws into him? Not long after his wife began to protest their stay there, she went missing. Fisher told those who asked several stories, but ultimately, word got out that the woman had committed suicide. Her depression had gotten the best of her, and worst yet, he had never been able to find her body and give her a proper burial. For years, the story was accepted as truth, although rumors swirled of the reclusive lighthouse keeper who seemed more disheveled and manic every time someone laid eyes on him. Finally, Fisher began to deteriorate, and as he was lying on his deathbed, surrounded by strangers and faces that were there more out of necessity than comfort, he confessed to the whole of it. He had murdered his dear wife all those years ago and buried her in a small plot of land beside the lighthouse. Why? Because she wanted to leave the lighthouse. And nobody leaves the lighthouse. After Fisher's death, new lighthouse keepers were tasked with the care of Cape Romaine Lighthouse, as well as the care of the small, unmarked grave laying on its grounds. Lighthouse keepers thereafter have held the tradition of tending to the grave of Fisher's wife, who unfortunately has never been known as anything else. Given the circumstances of her untimely death, I can think of no other person who more deserves having their name back. And yet, despite her anonymity in life, she has done everything in her power to command attention in death. Visitors and workers of Cape Romaine often hear the ghostly sound of footsteps climbing up and down the 195 steps of the lighthouse. One would think that they belong to Fisher, if not for the delicate and somewhat melancholy nature of the footsteps. The most ghastly of supernatural occurrences attributed to her spirit are the bloodstains found on the keeper's cottage wooden doors and floors. Bloodstains that, try as anyone might, will not go away, no matter how much cleaning product is used. They could remove the floors, raise the cottage, and build something fresh and new. But somehow that seems a disservice to the woman who only wanted to go home. Maybe all lighthouses, in some way, house the echoes of moments of fear, violence, and weakness. Maybe it's not just their rocky shores that we should be frightened of, but the secrets that they hold as well. Scary Stories for the Soul presents The Ghosts of Crater Lighthouse. From the Journal of Daniel Merriweather. Entry date, 25th of June, 1956. No amount of training or sailing is ever going to dull the nausea I feel when out at sea. I have never wished for land so much in my entire life. Writing seems to be the only thing that I can do to distract from the fact that my already empty stomach is threatening to heave out of my mouth again. I would ask the crew how much longer until we get to the island, but I already asked 30 minutes ago. They're such strange men, too. I understand the rough sailor persona that all these men tend to adopt, but they've been avoiding me this entire trip. Not even the captain will spare me more than a few words. I asked First Mate Bohannon about it, and he informed me that it wasn't necessarily me, it was my job. Or at least the job that I'm on my way to undertake. It's the island. Or, more specifically, it's the lighthouse on the island. They believe it's cursed, haunted, and any man who dares take on the role of lighthouse keeper might as well be haunted as well. They would rather send me on my way and forget about me. They've apparently transported every lighthouse keeper that Crater Lighthouse has ever had, and then transported their lifeless bodies back to shore. They'd rather not get too attached, Bohannon said. It doesn't surprise me. Sailors are a superstitious bunch. But apparently, the entire village adjacent to Crater Lighthouse is just as superstitious. They haven't been able to hold down a lighthouse keeper for years. You would never imagine that a few ghost stories would stop people from making a decent amount of money. It's also free boarding for a few months and some peace and quiet, away from the stress of the city. How ridiculous. I'm going to set my writing down before I vomit on it. Entry date, 29th of June, 1956. The island is quiet, as are the seas. 4 days here have already felt like an eternity, which I can't necessarily say is a bad thing. The lighthouse, although a little foreboding at night, is really quite serene in the daylight. My work isn't as arduous as I thought it would be either, so at least there's that. Oh, I also made a friend. Odd, no? He came strolling on to the island as if he had lived here all his life. I won't lie, he caught me a bit off guard. He said he had come by rowboat from the village, although I swear I didn't see a boat anywhere on shore and surely didn't hear one coming about. Some lighthouse keeper I am. His name is Kian, and he said he wanted to check up on me, knowing how superstitious the locals were. If he didn't come see me, he was afraid no one would. I couldn't help myself. I had to know. What exactly is it about this place that made everybody so uncomfortable? He said it was a long story, but upon pushing the matter, he said that for as long as he could remember, Crater Lighthouse served as more than just a beacon for lost boats. It was also a beacon for lost souls. All the souls lost at sea found their way to Crater Lighthouse. They follow the light, he said, and make the island their home. It is haunted by hundreds of lost souls claimed by the sea. That's why no one goes to Crater Lighthouse. That's why they can't keep a lighthouse keeper. All who try and stay inevitably go mad from the incessant ghost activity. There have been suicides, murders, men lost at sea. No lighthouse keeper has ever lasted more than 2 or 3 weeks. One did. He lasted a month before murdering his wife and child and then throwing himself from the lantern room. It makes sense now what I was told. If I couldn't make it, they would retire the position of lighthouse keeper altogether. I shouldn't have pushed. Kian didn't seem uncomfortable. On the other hand, he had a wide grin on his face the entire time he was divulging the lighthouse's secrets to me. But now I'm uncomfortable. I don't scare easily, but the fog is rolling in now, and I must admit, I am growing anxious of the darkness. I am marking the time as 3:24 a.m. Perhaps it's just the stories that Kian told me this afternoon, or perhaps it's my own imagination running wild in the dark. But I swore I heard the cry of a woman just behind my bedroom door. It woke me from my sleep, and now I'm straining my ears to hear it again. Are those footsteps? It sounds like heavy boots making their way down the stairs. I am exhausted. I'm sure that there is nothing out there. Damn that man for burrowing those stories into my brain. Entry date, 3rd of July, 1956. I am growing increasingly restless on the island. The fog that crawled in less than a week ago has not lifted. I feel as though I'll never see the sun again. There are people in the fog as well. I can see their silhouettes. Sometimes they look as though they are walking towards me, but mostly they just stand in the shadows. I know they are watching me, studying me. I don't have the courage to speak to them. There's something in their very nature that makes me want to hide forever. No, stop. Don't even think that. There are no people in the fog. There are no eyes watching you. You are isolated and exhausted and at your wit's end. Do not put too much stake into this. There is no one there. And yet, even now, as I write this in my bedroom, I look out my window and see them all staring up at me. They are there. I see them. I blink and the numbers change. Blink and there's 10 of them. Blink and there's 20. Blink and there's 15. Who are they? What are they? What do they want from me? Wait. Now they're gone. The time is once again 3:24 a.m., almost exactly on the dot. Now there is no denying that someone is here. I can hear those same heavy boots from before making their way up the stairs. Every time they arrive at the landing of my bedroom, I brace myself for whoever it is to force their way into my room. But they never do. They stand in silence and then walk back down the stairs. I can also hear voices. They talk and talk and talk and talk. It feels like a medley of conversations happening all at the same time. I don't know what to do. I am not brave enough to go down there. 5:47 a.m. I had enough and went to inspect the noises, but the moment I opened my bedroom door, everything stopped. I listened to the silence for a moment before turning back around. I went to close the door, and someone said, "The door is open." I don't know what I've done. Entry date, 7th July, 1956. I have not slept in 4 days. I don't know what is real and what is not. There are people in the fog. There are people walking on the island. There are voices in the night. The fog has not let up. There is no sun. There is no sky. Only the light from the lighthouse. I spend my days in the lantern room, watching them watching me. I don't know who they are or what they want. They wait until it is dark and I am isolated in my room to wander my home. Should I approach one? Should I speak to one? I'm afraid, by God, I am afraid. I could be going mad. There is a possibility that there is no one actually there, that this is all in my head. But I am not willing to risk what it takes to know for sure. I haven't spoken to a single soul since Kean came to the island and ruined me with his ghost stories. Perhaps it's the isolation that is making me see these things. I thought I was mentally equipped for this job. Having been an only child with less than affectionate parents, I was, or at least I thought I was, used to the loneliness that comes with not having regular company. But I am second-guessing everything now. I need to speak to Kean again. I need him to tell me that they were just stories, tales passed down from one weak-minded person to another. Perhaps then I can convince myself that everything is all right. They are watching me again. Some are walking towards the lighthouse. God, did I lock the door when I came up? Entry date, 10th of July, 1956. I am in ruin. I am frayed nerves and anxious delirium. Last night, I awoke to the sound of someone knocking on my bedroom door. In the fog of sleep, I stood up to open it, but then caught myself before I actually opened the door. I asked who it was, knowing full well that there is no reason, no way, that someone could actually be out there. The voice that responded was that of a woman. She asked me if I was the new lighthouse keeper. She asked me if I was willing to open the door and let her in. I told her, in as firm a voice as I could muster, that I was and would be doing no such thing. Rather sadly, she asked me why, and without hesitation, I said, "Ma'am, I don't know if you are alive or dead. And if you are dead, then you have no business in the land of the living, let alone my room." She said nothing after that, but instead walked back down the stairs. I could hear the delicate click, clack of her heeled shoes on the stairs. Before I could manage to feel or do anything else, piercing cry echoed through the lighthouse. The sound was everywhere. There was no escaping it. The most pain and anguished cry that a woman could utter, and it was radiating in my bones. I must have fainted as I woke this morning on the floor with a lump on my head. Then, who should I see as I am looking out my window but Kean, waving up at me from the shoreline with a smile on his face. I ran to him in nothing but my long underwear. "Kean," I cried out to him, "Kean, the island, it is damned, I am sure of it. There are people, faces in the fog, that have not left me since you last saw me. Either I am losing my mind, or this island and this lighthouse really are haunted." At first, the man said nothing, just kept smiling at me, his eyes wide and blank. And then he said, "It is damned. We all are. And now you are too." And he disappeared, evaporated into smoke before my very eyes. He was a ghost. He had to be. I have been locked in my room ever since. The sun is going down and I am petrified. I cannot leave. I cannot sleep. I cannot even blink for fear that I might come face to face with another one of those beings. Will I die here? Entry date, 12th of July, 1956. There is blood on the walls, bloody handprints all over everything. They are children's hands, I know it. They are so small. No scrubbing has been able to remove them. I would try and ignore them, if not for the bloody handprints that now stain my clothes. They have marked me. Entry date, 13th of July, 1956. I have found the logs that previous lighthouse keepers kept in the main office. Each man experienced everything that I am experiencing now. They slowly went mad, and I fear that I am doing the same. Kian was right. According to these logs, the lighthouse is a beacon for lost souls who died at sea. They follow the light of the lighthouse and make this island their home. Do they see me as an interloper? There is one entry from the last lighthouse keeper that might be the thing that saves me. It reads, "They need the lighthouse. They need its light. They follow it to safety. Am I not essential to them? Do I not keep the lighthouse working? They need me more than I need them. They can either fall in line, or I shut the light off forever." Before I arrived here, I read that my predecessor died in the lantern room. He drove his head through the beacon, but failed to extinguish it. He was mistaken. He saw this place as his, but it isn't. It isn't his. It's not mine. It's theirs. We are simply here to care for it. If I am to survive, I must fall in line. Entry date, 14th of July, 1956. My mind is open. I am free. I take care of the lighthouse and of the island's inhabitants. They came to me last night. I saw them emerge from the fog. Saw them walking toward the lighthouse. Rather than shut myself in my room as I usually do, I opened my bedroom door and waited for them. I heard their footsteps before I saw them. I felt my room grow cold, frigid, until I could see my breath hanging in the air. And then they were all there, every last one of them. All manner of man, woman, and child. Some complete, some missing eyes or limbs, some clearly the victims of mutiny or drowning. There were so many of them. In unison, they asked, "Are you the new lighthouse keeper?" I looked into each one of their eyes and said, "Yes, I am here to keep your light shining bright. I am here to take care of you." Then they touched me, placed their hands on me, and branded me with a special mark. I am never to leave the island. This is my home. These are my people. In life now, and then later in death. I belong to Crater Island. Tune in to new episodes of Scary Stories for the Soul on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Don't forget to follow Scary Stories for the Soul on Instagram and Twitter, and rate the show on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And if you have any legends, myths, or ghost stories you want to see covered on the show, email your ideas to scarystoriesforthesoul2020@gmail.com. This has been Isabel Cortez. Until next time.